Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, thanks for staying with us. Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that story and we'll make sure that Pizzo, you know, he's got his people on the ground. As things move and develop, we'll make sure that he goes back and gets that story for us, which is very, very important. Sometimes, you know, we're in the middle of what is a hot story and then we move our eyes from it. But we'll make sure that we keep our eyes on the Stilfontein story. And I think it's got many, many legs. Now, on to our favorite feature of the week. In fact, I'd say the book feature. My favorite, at least. Today, we've got scholar, author, really a champion for not only just writing and literature, but also indigenous languages. Lerato Trok is now in studio, in the flesh today. And we were so keen to talk to you last week, and technology let us down. Thank you for coming.
Dumelate. Dumelo, I'm happy to be here.
Is today not Indigenous Language Day, International Indigenous Language Day?
It was. What is today? It was.
Today is the 4th. Was it? Today is the 4th. Is it the 4th or the 5th? Marinelli this week, innit? Today is the 4th.
Yeah.
Today is the 4th. So it's. I think it's a blessing that you're here to grace us today.
Thank you.
Particularly because I had a look at your book list. And I was so happy. I was so happy that we're not only looking at English books.
Yes, ma'am.
But I was also happy that we are also looking at children's books as too.
Yes, ma'am.
You have a lovely, lovely range. Children, sort of teenagers, and all of that. So before we get there, I want us to talk about your love for books. And you speak so fondly of your mother.
Yes.
You speak so fondly of your mother. And that she was a storyteller in the home.
Yes. So I grew up in the Kalahari, in a small town in Kuruman. And I mean, we had nothing. We had no libraries, we had no books, we had no entertainment. So the only thing
Maraditori.
Yo, my mother was a master storyteller in a beautiful way, Kastwana.
Yeah.
You know, she would just tell tell stories, beautiful stories, and then my aunt Monati fella when the tamani just wanna when they start you know Rasimula fella, she starts telling the story to Lanili Dimu, and then my aunt will perform them. I was just intrigued.
Yeah.
You know, that's the beauty of literature, is that it and doesn't only have to be a text.
Did you ever engage because I went into this later in years. There was somebody who was a storyteller in my upbringing. And I, at some point I did ask her, did you ever engage and ask whether the stories came as she was telling them or whether she had formulated the story before?
There was no formulation. No formulation. The stories were...
They were coming as she was telling them.
You know, the way my mother was a storyteller, even when she was telling us stories about how she was grew up during apartheid, even if it was said, but she would just make it sound so beautiful, like we would laugh about what the white people were doing to them.
It's a gift.
And she just had that gift of telling stories. And I think I took that from her. I got that from her.
Yeah.
But she told it in a different way. I told them in books.
Yeah. You know? And so the love for reading was from teachers?
The love for reading, well, it was first started at home through oral storytelling.
Mm.
But I do not remember a time when I did not love reading.
Mm.
I don't remember a time when I was not intrigued by a book.
Mm.
Just seeing a book, even if it was, because we didn't have libraries, you know, and my mom, you know, we grew up Catholic at home. There were lots of Catholic books. I would just read everything. You know, those watchtowers we came into homes, I would read those books. I would just devour everything. I mean, it wasn't okay for a 10-year-old to read Daniel Steele, but I think at 10, I read Daniel Steele. The Reader's Digest, all that stuff, I read everything. So I think it was just innate for me. But I think because I came from a mother who just told those stories in a way that it just made me feel like this is all that I want to do.
How important was the journey then through your growth with teachers who continued? Because I think it's not a one-man thing. Someone must take the baton and keep going.
My grade one teacher.
Yeah.
I will never forget how my grade one teacher made me feel. I still remember her name, Mema Slati. I will never forget how Mema Slati made me feel when I was that 7 year old in her class, when she told the story, when she taught us how to read. She just made me feel like I was so attracted to books and reading and all that. Mema Slati, I remember my standard one teacher, just all of them. My teachers were just so phenomenal when it comes to my literature, my reading journey. It was just my teacher. I always talk about my teacher in that way, that for me, my reading was just, it was not a one-off thing. It started with my mom. But fortunately, when I went to school, all my teachers who taught me languages, they were just so phenomenal. And most of them, I think they did predict that I would be a writer one day, because they did say.
It as an academic, as someone who observes this very closely in your work, it must be painful when you look at that report that just came out.
Yeah.
That speaks of reading, what is it?
The Pearls 20,
And after the Pearls, I think they've just released the 2030.
Yeah. The reading panel thing.
The reading panel report, which confirms the Pearls report, saying that, you know, our young people are not reading for meaning. They just can't. They can maybe read, as in say the words on the paper, but it's not sinking.
You know, it's a lot of things. It's a lot of issues that comes with that. You know, when I was growing up at the time, being taught in Setswana was not a challenge. It was not a problem, because I grew up, I'm Tswana. I grew up in the Tswana household. I grew up in the former Buputa Tswana, where we were just taught, it was just natural that we would be taught in Setswana. It's different for the children now. You know, our kids come from our household where even when the two parents speak Setswana, they'll just speak, they are both Tswana or both Zulu or whatever, they'll just speak English to the kids, because the teacher at school has said, you need to speak English to them and so on. And then they just relent and just do it, which is not okay, you know, for children to not be able to talk in there. And I know the nature of how our country is right now, after 94, after apartheid, that we now live in suburbs and the suburban schools don't have our language. But we should insist. You see, because the only children in our country who are being taught in their home languages are the English and Afrikaans children. And if you look at the Afrikaans children, they actually speak English better than us, because they are being taught in their home languages. And there has been research that has shown that once a child is being taught in their home language, they actually do better in another language. So for our children, it's so sad. You know, even this whole thing of the Pearls report and the Pearls, you know, how they are being asked questions, is very Western. It's a Western way of asking them questions. They don't understand even the way the questions have been, you know, put together and so on. It's not the way that they know how to answer those questions. It's just very foreign to them, because it's just the one thing. They ask the U.S. children the same question that they ask our children.
And you know, language is such a dynamic thing. And language, it's not a direct translation problem. It's got intricacies. So a child that grows up, if they are in a family of people who speak Tswana, let's say even isiZulu or whatever, you would find that there are words that can mean so many different things, like tala, as a color. It could be green, it could be blue,
yellow,
it could be so many things. But if you then are forcing the child to translate tala, and they give you maybe what is not your understanding in English of what tala is, you mark them wrong. Whereas tala could mean green, blue, as you say, yellow. It could be, and they are right. They're right, because in their mother tongue, that's that.
Yes,
and it's the same in isiZulu. I think the ihlaza, it's the same. Ihlaza is, I think it could be green, it could be blue, I think. And again, the child's not wrong.
Yes.
But if they wrote something, because in English, there is blue, there is green.
That's it.
It's not a cluster. It's specific. then there are either issues of you being either colorblind or all kinds of things come into the fore. But there's a problem. In other words, this child has a problem. Whereas maybe not.
The child is right.
Their understanding of Hlaza is Hlaza, or green, or Tala is just Tala.
Yeah.
And it's not a thing.
Yeah.
It's just Tala. Whereas for English, it's a thing.
It's just, it's either blue or yellow.
It's either blue or yellow.
There's no...
There's no ambiguity. It's Tala is like, don't you get it? It's just...
Yeah.
It's just it. It's not that deep.
No.
It's just Tala.
It's just Tala. That's it.
And that is such a disadvantage. And to your point about, it's so nuanced. And we haven't yet, I think, seen the damage all of this is causing.
And it's also actually not good. You know, for people think that we are crazy when we talk about children needing mother tongue. It's not something that, it shouldn't be either or for, you know, English or Africans. No, we live in a multilingual country, in a multicultural country. Why can't the same children, who are like, 80% or so of the school population, not be taught in their home language? Mm. And you think that we are going to have an okay country? It cannot be okay. It cannot be. That's why I love, you know, I promote the language, the African language. I promote Setswana because I know what it did for me.
Mm.
And it's the same thing about the author that I'm going to be talking, you know, talking about his book, Sabata Mpomokai, who writes beautifully in Setswana.
Mm.
He has traveled the world just because he writes in his home language. Mm. It has never been because he writes in English. It is the Setswana that has taken him to places.
And it is this notion that you would sometimes get commercial publishers telling you, you're not going to sell.
Yes.
Stop, you're not going to sell. It's not going to be commercial enough. No one buys the books. It's not true, is it?
No, it is not true. And I will tell you something. For us as authors, you know, when you write in your language, when you write, it's so liberating. I mean, this book... Sabata's books are being read in universities. They are selling.
But also, it's funny to me how other languages see no crisis in writing first in their language, whether it's French or Spanish or Italian. And then there's no crisis. You can always translate the book.
I mean, we were told when we were in Sweden in 2021, 22 that English books in Sweden, they sell very little.
Yeah.
They don't sell.
And if you really like it, you can translate it.
You can translate it.
Just write it in the language that you think is going to make sense to you. That frees you.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the books that you've selected for us.
So I asked Tando if I can do
absolutely.
My book.
Absolutely. How do we have an award-winning author write so many beautiful books and we don't... Let's start with your book.
Let's start with my book. Yeah. So this is the latest one that I have written,
Golden Girl,
and it's about Oma Katrina.
Yeah. How old is she now?
She's 92.
My goodness. She's the only true language speaker, right?
The only living mother tongue. We must make a distinction. Mm-hmm. The only mother tongue, because she has taught her daughter, Claudia, her granddaughter, Claudia, and another person, and the children that she's... But mother tongue speaker, like meaning that she is the only original
speaker.
Mother tongue
Not
speaker.
Someone, because she's been teaching.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so now you've got other people who've adopted the Kru language. Yes.
So she is the only mother tongue speaker. So when I wrote this book, you know, I completely wrote it with her.
I was sitting
down and I was asking her, is this right? And she's still very sharp. She was 90, I think, when I was writing this book. And we went through it and said, Lorato, you are wrong. That's not what I said.
Wow.
This is not it. You should be saying this and said. So this is just a beautiful, beautiful story for preteens and teens, because we have very little, we don't have a lot of books in our country for chapter books.
Mm.
We actually don't have. We have a lot of picture books for young ones, and then from 6 to 12, 12 to 14, we just don't
That's interesting.
So this is it. This is one of the fourth of the biographies that I've been writing for children. This is number four that I have done. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful book with pictures and the story of Oma Katrina, how she got to lose her language because she was forced, her family was forced to abandon the language, because when they were working on that farm, when the farmer threatened them, he said that the language is ugly, I just want you to... He was going to kill them.
Mm.
He was going to kill them. And remember, it was that time when actually people people were getting license, you had to have a license to kill the koi and the sand people, the Khoisan people.
It like was legal. Animals.
Yes.
Like animals.
They were hunted. You can hunt you them. Had to have yeah. a hunting certificate right. to kill them. So they knew that it was not just a threat. It was a thing. He was going to kill them. Mm. And you see, we were talking about all these
depressing
things.
And how things. Easily you can lose your culture
and
your language.
And how easily you can lose yeah. your culture and your yeah. language. And it just disappeared. He said the so other quickly. People were just so
scared
of the farmer because they knew he was going to kill them. And the language just went.
Mm. Let's read a piece.
Definitely read a piece. I think my favorite is actually chapter 2, where how they, you know, speak in the language in secret.
Yeah, okay.
Over the years, the family grew. There was Hannah, Rit, Anna,
Katrina. Let me just make sure that the mic is close to you first, so that we can hear you nicely. Okay, no, please start again. Thank
okay.
you.
So this is chapter 2 of the book. Over the years, the family grew. There was Hannah, there was Uma Katrina's siblings. Mm. And eventually, there were 8 girls and 3 boys in the family. The majority of the farm workers were Sa, and Ngu was their way of communicating. Katrina's father was a Motswana, but he never taught her Setswana. Her mother was Sa, and they spoke both Afrikaans and Ngu at home. All the farm workers had to speak Afrikaans. Mm. Listen to me, said their mother. The farmer has said that no one on this farm, including children, will be allowed to speak any language other than Afrikaans. It is now the law of the farm. We can't fight. Why did he say that, Mama? Katrina asked. He said he didn't want the children to hear our ugly language, said their father. His voice was serious. He promised to shoot anyone who goes against. Dad, Mama, whispered Katrina. Don't worry, Katrina, said her mother. I will teach all of you to speak Ngu. It is our language, and I'm proud of it. Thank you, Mama. Listen closely, her mother said, her voice as soft as a breeze. Ngu is more than words. It is a bridge between our hearts and the past. We will speak Ngu at home, and the farmer won't know. I love all the click sounds we make when we speak Ngu, Mama, said Katrina. I'm glad because I won't be ashamed of our language, and neither should my children be ashamed. Just be careful when you are near the farmer and his family. Don't let them hear you speaking our language. Katrina and her family continued to secretly speak their language at home. They had to be very careful, and they spoke in harsh tones for fear of the farmer. When Katrina was old enough, she had to work on the farm alongside her parents. She went about her days doing exactly what she was told to do. Everything seemed to go smoothly until the day she heard her father's voice booming across the farmyard. It was loud. Then she heard the farmer's voice. It was even louder. Her mother ran up. What's going on? I don't know, Mama, but they both sound angry. They heard boots crunching on the gravel. Get your things. Papa, what? No questions, Katrina. Get your brothers and sisters. Ask Simon to get the chickens and goats. Pack up everything you can carry. But, Papa, we are leaving this farm now. We are going to another town. Do as your pa says and be quick. But where are we going, Mama? She asked. I don't know, Katrina. They had no idea that the next town that they were going to go on feet was 170 kilometers away.
Mm. That is the name of the title of the book again?
Golden Girl.
And that is, it's a chapter book, okay? For preteens,
yeah.
sort of, preteens.
Yes.
It's by Lorato Trok. Okay, you've got other selections.
I've got other selections. Mm-hmm. So I've got Moletlo wa Manong,
yes.
written by Sabata Mpomokai, who, you know,
oh,
this
he's
book.
Amazing.
He's amazing. He is amazing. And I was talking to him and say, you know, when he started writing in Setswana, he got freed.
Because he thought he had to write in English.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Because he was writing in English all along.
Yeah,
but
all along.
When he started writing in Setswana, he got freed. Yeah. He said there was like this whole thing that came over him that like, Why was I writing in the first place? And when you read Sabata's book, he writes so beautifully. Mm. His Setswana is just impeccable. Mm. When you have grown in that culture, he writes about his culture. His characters are just, because he knows what he's writing about. He doesn't have, it comes from his heart. It comes from his mind. It comes from his culture. Mm. When it comes from your culture and everything, and that's it. And, you know, we were just talking about all these things about, you know, everything is now political with the U.S. with what's going on. And you know, when Sabata wrote this book, Moletlo wa Manong, he was actually in residence at the University of Iowa in 2014. Okay. And like I am saying, he said that it was his writing in his mother tongue that took him places.
Wow.
He did not have to go to the U.S. to write in English. He went to the U.S. and wrote in his mother tongue.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, and he was just way, you know, in front of everyone else, because this book is actually about, you know, Moletlo wa Manong. Manong is this vultures that are just, it's politicians chowing money, being politicians. And it's basically state capture.
Yeah.
Before state capture.
Yeah.
Sabata wrote this in 2014 and state capture came out like 2017. Mm. Everyone was talking state capture. But because, you know, it had a name then, but Sabata knew about it then. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about politicians doing what politicians do, you know, driving their big cars, doing whatever they are doing, but the one thing that they are supposed to be doing, they are not doing it, looking after the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And what I love about Sabata's characters is that he writes very strong female characters. Mm-hmm. His female character, you know, he's a man.
Yeah.
And most of the books, when you read about men, they make women so weak and so needy and so everything else. Not Sabata.
Yeah.
You know, all his books that he's written in Setswana, he's got very strong characters who are strong, who are the ones who are taking care of the men, the ones who are taking men out of their misery and all that. And that's what I love about his writing. But for me, it's the whole thing. The whole thing about this book is how the language is, with the use of the Setswana language.
Oh,
how he writes the Setswana language and how he just, you know, and you know, because he writes about Christiana and then, you know, the book is based in Christiana where he grew. That's where he grew up.
Yeah.
You can only write about what you know.
Well, yes. Yeah, you so know, that's Moletlo wa Manong.
Moletlo wa Manong by Sabata, yes.
And then the last one?
I have... Oh, let me actually do this because I had another one in Setswana as well, but
out of time,
Chasing the Tales of My Father's Cattle by the incomparable Silwe Magona.
Absolutely.
This book, I cannot tell you how beautiful the writing. Sindiwe Magona writes in a way that you want to take those words out of the pages and eat them up.
Mm.
That's how she writes. And this book is very, you know, you can tell her the isiXhosa culture inside of it. She writes so beautifully about her, the culture of isiXhosa culture and all that. This, you know, this book came out years ago.
It is, but it's still new.
Yes.
It's still new in how every time you go back to it.
Every time when you go back to it, I've gone back to
it's
it
one,
many
yes,
times.
Me too.
Yes.
It's one of those.
It is just one of those books that you just want to just devour and go to it over and over, as I have done. So, you know, for me, I made sure that I chose all South African writing because I think we've got just the most amazing authors in this country.
Oh, Oslerata, thank you. Can you believe we've run out of time? We've run out of time. We will post all the books so that you know exactly what they are and then ask for them by name. If you go to a store and they say they don't have it, ask. Go to the counter. That is how authors get popular.
Yeah.
If you don't ask, they don't go get the book. So please, that's how you get to generate interest. Lerato, thank you for coming through and
thank
I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much, Nello, for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Folks, we'll be back tomorrow at 8. Thanks, everybody.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.